Okay, so let's have a few minutes of silent meditation.
So here, either, you know, do a little bit of reflection on what I spoke about in the morning. Yeah, if you can't remember what I spoke about in the morning, then reflect on the three kinds of pots. And figure out which one you are. Okay. The upside down one, the leaky one, or the one with garbage in it. Okay. Or continue to reflect a little bit about this, these misconceptions, and see what you can do about them. Let's recall our motivation. So cultivate it, recall it yourself. Okay, so we're going to look at the eight verses of thought training. Thought training is sometimes translated as mind transformation, mind training, thought transformation. The Tibetan is lojung. Okay, but it all means the same thing. Okay. So with the thought of attaining enlightenment for the welfare of all beings, who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel, I will constantly practice holding them dear. Okay. So in our mind, the mind has the thought, the wish, the aspiration of attaining enlightenment. Okay, why? For the welfare of sentient beings. Not because Buddha's the highest and I want to be the highest. Okay? And not because I want to have some far out wacky experience. And, you know, not because I want somebody to give me some water and flowers, but for the benefit of all beings. Now, how does attaining enlightenment relate to the benefit of all beings? First of all, what in the world is enlightenment? If I get enlightened, how's that going to affect anybody? Yeah. So the Tibetan word for enlightenment is jangchub. And jang means to purify, chu means to grow, to enhance, to be endowed with. So enlightenment, short way, is a state in which all the defilements have been cleansed and all the good qualities have been brought to culmination. Now, then the discussion of what are the defilements, that's a whole long thing, you know. So we have ignorance as the root. We have ignorance, anger, and attachment as the three poisons. We have the 10 root afflictions and 51 mental factors, 20 auxiliary afflictions, 10 root, but they're compact into 6. And just depending on which tradition you have, then you have the 10 fetters. You know, there's different ways of enumerating the things that we want to get rid of. So on one hand, it's the various afflicted states. On the other hand, it's also the subtle latencies of those afflicted mental states, because they obscure the mind. They prevent the mind from being omniscient, from being all-knowing. The idea being that the mind's nature is clarity and awareness, so the mind by nature has the possibility to know objects. When it can't know objects, it's because of some obscuration there's something coming between the object and the mind so that the mind can't know it. So if something's far away, you know, we can, our eye organ can't see it. Or, you know, if a sound is far away, the ear organ can't hear it. You know, so there's some obscuration there. But the deeper level of obscuration, or if there's a wall, you can't see something through the wall, okay? But the deeper level of obscuration are the afflictions and the karma that are on the mind. And that's just, it's like having a dirty mirror. And it's like, you know, you try and look out your windshield and it's all fogged up. And even if you get rid of the fog, it's all covered with leaves and dirt on the front. So if your windshield is like the mind, the afflictions and then the latencies are like all the stuff that's covering it. So it can't reflect, you know, it can't know the objects. So when the mind knows all the objects, you know, then it can know everything. They say, like, we can see the palm of our hand that clearly. So when you know things, then you're no longer afraid of them. Yeah. Because you know not only their conventional nature, but you also know how they really exist. And so knowing that they are empty of inherent existence, then that relieves all the tension. Not attention, just tension. Okay? Yeah. So on one hand, the enlightenment is a state in which all those things have been eliminated, and therefore the mind's able to see all phenomena. Now imagine what you could do if you could see all phenomena, if you knew other people's karmic propensities. Then if you wanted to help them, you wouldn't be stumbling in the dark, because you would have some idea of what their karma was, you'd have idea of even their mental inclinations. So often now we want to help, but, you know, we don't really understand somebody else's situation, and so it becomes difficult to help. When you know everything, then you really understand their situation, not just the thing on the outside of this is where they live and, you know, what their external situation is. But you know their mental states, the propensities on their mind towards different spiritual paths, the karma that they have that can bring either realizations or suffering. Okay? So you have all that awareness. And if you have all of that knowledge and it's combined with compassion, then you can do so many incredible things, because the compassion wants to eliminate suffering, and that knowledge gives you the information you need to actually do it in a skillful way, in a helpful way. Okay, so that's why we want to attain enlightenment, so we're not the blind leading the blind anymore. Okay. Now, why in the world do we want to work for the welfare of all sentient beings? There's so many of them. Yeah, why would we want to work for so many other sentient beings? I mean, they aren't us, and we're the most important ones, and their happiness and suffering doesn't affect me. So why should I want to do anything for them? And even if I do try and help them, they just tell me to leave them alone and go away, or they do the opposite thing to the advice I give. So why should I spend my time, you know, doing something for the welfare of sentient beings, let alone all of them? I mean, some of them are just too much. They're so obnoxious. Yeah. This is the way we think, right? Yeah? Yeah? So why in the world would we want to do anything for other sentient beings? Why?
Because when you really start holding their benefit for your own, you discover that that's where joy comes from.
Oh, so some joy comes from holding their benefit above our own.
Or if they're enjoying something, I see that and I can share that joy rather than resenting it.
Okay. So we can share their joy rather than resenting it. But how does holding them dearer than ourselves bring joy? Because then they get the chocolate cake and I don't. That doesn't make me happy. How does that bring more joy?
That's the mystery. They're happy, you know, and I'm just...
Well, how about if they're happy, they'll stop hurting me.
Okay, so if they're happy, they'll stop hurting me. Okay, that's true. Mm-hmm.
In the example of a piece of chocolate cake, yes, I love chocolate cake. It's delicious and causes me to be happy. But I've noticed what causes me to be happier is the mind of generosity. It has spaciousness, whereas the mind of wanting a piece of cake does not.
So the mind of generosity brings more joy than the mind of miserliness?
Sounds crazy, but I think so.
So in your daily life actions, are you more generous or more miserly?
Well, habitually. Miserly. When I'm mindful, then I try to be generous, and there's some evidence that it's better.
Okay, so there's some evidence from your experience.
Yeah.
That generosity makes you feel better than being miserly. But kind of on the routine level, miserliness trumps.
Absolutely.
Yeah?
You know, one thing that I've been thinking about is when I've kind of started calling it like a really big thank you, which is because I think about how when someone, they open a door for me, I say thank you, or they kind of, you know, give me something that I want or help me some kind of way, that I say thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been thinking about this whole enlightenment thing and helping others, and that because people have been way kinder to me than just opening a door.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've started kind of thinking of paying them back like as kind of a bigger thank you, like the biggest thank you that I could give,
mm-hmm.
give people. So that's one way that I've started
Okay. So you started appreciating the things that others do for you, and then thank you comes automatically.
It actually does.
But now you're wanting to not just say thank you, but do something.
That's what's kind of starting to make sense to me, is that, you know, I could bake them an everything free chocolate cake or something, you know, the free dairy free sugar free. And that will make them happy for a while, but I was just thinking that if I really want to say thank you, that I have to do something that's really big to really say thank you.
Okay. So you can make them a chocolate cake,
but
that's not a very long-lasting happiness. Mm. So what's a bigger thank you?
Well, that's what I have been thinking about, to be able to really help people. Because there's so many people that are kind of in my world that I would really like to help.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm stumbling. Like, okay, what do I say? What do I do? What's really? Because you're not going to really take my advice. You're going to nod and maybe you agree, but you're not going to really take my advice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't give the best advice yet. I can only do what I can do right now. But I would like to reach a state before I can really, really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it sounds like this is, that I haven't reached it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so you want to reach that state where you really know the right thing to say that will really benefit them. Yeah. And you want to benefit them because?
Because they really have done a lot for me.
Because they've done a lot for
really
you.
Have.
But they're also a pain in the neck.
They really are.
So they've done a lot for you, but they're, you know, sentient beings are a pain in the neck. So why exert yourself?
Something that you have said is kind of stuck. There's been more help than harm.
Oh, there's been more help than harm.
It's even like I was thinking of a concrete example. Even people who maybe they're a member of the Ku Klux Klan,
mm-hmm.
But maybe they're a lineman for an electric company. Mm-hmm. And so my lights went out. And so they get out in the middle of the night or whatever, and they go repair the lights.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they could really harm me in other ways if they knew me personally, but I'm still benefiting from them, even if I don't know them personally. then I'm still benefiting from them. So I've just really been thinking about that a lot, what mm-hmm. you've been saying about how they really, really get a lot more help than harm.
Mm. Okay, so there's more help than harm. And somebody could be really obnoxious on a personal level. Yeah. Or abominable on a yeah. personal level. But they still, in other ways, could benefit you. So does that mean that the Nazis were kind by giving food to the people in the concentration camps?
No, but they weren't always Nazis.
They weren't always Nazis?
No. Not in all their lives.
You sure?
No. It sounds plausible enough.
It sounds plausible enough that they weren't always Nazis.
Yeah.
They weren't always Nazis in this life.
They weren't always Nazis in this life.
Yeah.
Were they kind giving food to the people in the concentration camps? Is that kindness?
Well, some of them probably were kind because they were part of the machine that they couldn't get out of, but they were doing, given the small range that they could help, did what they could without getting shot themselves.
Yeah, but let's look at, that's not the typical Nazi.
There's Nazi, then there's Nazi.
You know, so were they kind, giving food to the people in the concentration camps?
Well, the people had something they needed. They stayed alive.
Depends on their motivation.
No, it doesn't. Because we still benefit no matter what someone's motivation. If someone gives me bread and they hate me or they love me, I still have the bread.
Yeah.
I still stay alive.
Mm-hmm. But the thing about Nazi, that's a generalization for an awful lot of different kinds of people.
I'm not going into all of that. I realize all that.
No.
But I'm just talking.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Okay.
If
were they kind?
Isn't that kindness? If we're
yeah.
It's dependent arising, you know, from the side of the beneficiary, then it was an act of kindness, regardless of what it was from the side of the person. I mean, it's all mm-hmm. empty. It's empty of any inherent existence, so it has to be dependent on the fact.
But they also imprison the people.
Well, that was not kind. Be kind and not kind.
So somebody can be kind and not kind at the same time?
Yeah.
Expand on what Kevin said, because it says all. And, you know, you're going to find examples where there's a person that you're not going to benefit from. It's just truly a mean person that doesn't contribute anything.
Really?
Well, I think when you say all, I mean, in this example, but in previous lives. I mean, if you look beyond just this life,
you're going to find somebody who's thoroughly evil.
No, you will find something that's good about a person. What I'm saying. Because if we limit ourselves to this life, mm-hmm. and we say all sentient beings,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's people that are going to fit into your category. Maybe you can really dig and find a little tiny minutia thing that you may benefit from. But to me, wouldn't it? If you look in previous mm-hmm. lives. It's a bigger picture.
Okay, so you're saying in this life, you know, there are people who are really evil and really corrupt and don't have anything good about them.
You might be able to find a little tiny thing.
Something little tiny. But if you look in a previous life, you might find something good about them.
Well, how about
it's a bigger...
Yeah?
Well, what about they were always our mothers?
Yes.
So we're paying the kindness that they do when they were our mothers.
Uh-huh.
Exactly.
Yeah. But how about all these people who say, but I'm so wounded by what my mother did or didn't do?
That was then. This is now.
That was then.
I prefer to think of it as more like, you know, high tide floats all boats. You know, I mean, it's, you know, all sentient beings include me and include all the other sentient beings. And I just think... If I act for the welfare of all sentient beings, then you know it's helping, you know, bringing the level up a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. if we're, you know, climbing out of the hell realms. I mean, in the hell realms, everyone acts on their own accord. You know, that in my mind, that's you know, the quintessential hell would be everyone could be completely selfish and aggressive and attacking each other, you know. Who would want to live like that, you know? Yeah. So why not work for a situation where everyone gets...
Okay, so you're saying benefit sentient beings simply because not benefiting them just is... creates so much pain and havoc.
Yeah.
Okay, Rachel?
I've been thinking about this a lot before I even came to the Abbey. So this whole enlightenment thing and trying to shake out where I really sit with it, you know, not just in theory. And I come up against this place where I would love to bite off wholeheartedly on the idea of benefiting sentient beings just to benefit sentient beings. But then I get to my calculator kind of person who goes, I have to have so much faith in this path to say that the eventual person I would become, because it will take so much effort to become that. Mm-hmm. And it's this faith that that Buddha person is actually capable of being of great benefit and help. Because this person right now really isn't. Mm-hmm. You know, and I understand the branching divergence in Buddhism, where one school says, no, the best thing you can do for all human beings is to just go get enlightened yourself, or to just go purify your own defilements because you can't help anybody. And this other school is saying, no, these Buddhas, they really have this ability to benefit and to help. And once you get there, you can offer great help. But that's my point is just that's a step of faith.
Okay.
Unless you have actual knowledge of the Buddhas.
Okay, so you're saying that we take on faith that enlightenment is possible and that a Buddha actually has those abilities and can be of greater benefit, because saying that sentient, that just get out of samsara and be liberated yourself, why not do that? Why put in all the extra effort to get enlightened? How do you know it's even possible to benefit others by being enlightened? How do you know? Why not just look for liberation yourself?
Because the reasonings make a little bit of sense.
Because what?
The reasonings do make a little bit of sense.
Okay, what reasonings?
Well, the reasonings that, for example, that we are interconnected, and that those beings have been kind to us, if I really think about it over and over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if I'm suffering, how can I, given that, if I'm so overwhelmed by afflictions, how could I just leave them behind?
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Okay, so one thing being that we're interrelated, and so thinking about myself above others doesn't seem fair.
Yeah.
It challenges our sense of fairness and justice. Okay, but what else? How do you know being a Bodhi can benefit? Yeah?
I don't know. But I think that, first off, I think that I can see that the suffering I have, other people have, and that we all want to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
That's so clear.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I can't see anything else better to do. I mean, really, what else are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Oh, you can get liberated for yourself.
I don't think that. I actually don't know that there would be enough motivation to actually follow the path. That was my motivation. I really wonder sometimes if that would be enough.
Because some people feel it would be easier. Just you're motivated for yourself. So
yeah.
Just get yourself out. Forget all those troubles.
When I'm thinking about myself, I'm miserable. So it's hard for me to think that. That path would work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably just fall into some trip and get stuck there.
Okay, so when you think about yourself, you're miserable, even if you're thinking about your own enlightenment.
Well, it's still...
I mean, your own liberation.
I'm more still in the samsara existence. So, you know, for me, all that is too theoretical.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it would make much sense to follow it.
Follow what?
To follow just the path of liberation.
Uh-huh. Okay. But what about Rachel? She's sitting there. She's not, you know, so sure. Rachel, where did your the benefit you've received, where has it come from?
It, of course, comes from all people. And, but what I'm saying, the argument with saying I want to benefit everybody else because they've benefited me, mm-hmm. ideally is a very self-centered argument. And I'm on board with it, by the way. I'm like 100% on board with it. I love helping people. I get so much joy mm-hmm. out of every time I manage to step out of my self-centered self and participate in the world in a way that's not all about me. So I agree with all of that. I'm just on a close, careful reflection, trying mm-hmm. to get even out of... Because that argument boils down to a self-centered argument also.
Why is it self-centered that I want to help others because they've helped me?
Because it's still about me. It's still about the benefit I've received. It's still about, like, because I've been a beneficiary, therefore I want to pay something back. Mm-hmm. It's not, regardless of whether I've benefited at all, mm-hmm. I want to help, you know, that deeper mm-hmm. altruism. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't care if I've benefited. I want these people to be happy
okay.
for their own side, regardless, or people or bugs or critters.
Mm-hmm. But to have a sense of wanting others to be happy, don't we have to have a sense of wanting ourselves to be happy too and knowing that they're like us? Yeah. And so that very easily then leads into, well, they've also done things that have brought about happiness for me. Yeah. But I see your point, you know, wanting them to benefit just because for their sake to be happy, not because... But you're assuming that you feel obliged to repay them. Is it possible to repay them, but without this feeling of heavy obligation?
I guess my question just hinges, is just stating a fact that to me, from where I sit, by my lack of experience mm-hmm. of some of these deeper things, I'm noticing that it takes a degree of faith. Of just saying, mm-hmm. I do want to have bodhicitta, and mm-hmm. I do see this path as, but it's taking this step over a chasm that feels like faith that I will eventually be able to benefit.
Right. So it does feel like faith at the beginning, you know, that I don't understand this whole enlightenment thing, but it sounds good, so I kind of believe in it, and I hope it's true. But, you know, sometimes when you learn more about the Dharma, then you'll see that there's certain reasons and that it doesn't entirely depend upon faith. Okay? For example, if we look, well, okay, I'm practicing the path. I've benefited from practicing the path. How has that benefit come about? Did I just learn the Dharma out of the sky? Where did the Dharma come from? How was it that I learned the Dharma? You know, well, there must have been somebody who understands it fully, who taught it at the beginning. Otherwise, how could I meet these teachings? Or how could my teachers have encountered these teachings? Okay. In other words, it isn't like the Dharma's just kind of there and I'm going to find it and understand it automatically. Somebody had to teach it. Somebody, you know, because my ignorant mind isn't going to make up the Dharma and see it. So somebody had to teach me. Well, what's the source of those teachings? Who's the source of those teachings? Okay. Well, the liberated beings are the source, but they can't describe the bodhisattva path because they haven't actualized that. Or they can describe it on one level, but they can't describe it on the level of experience. So, you know, in talking about the bodhisattva path, doesn't there have to be somebody who's a bodhisattva who's traversed that whole path? Who's been able to describe it from their own experience? Or did some person, Joe Blow, just kind of make the whole thing up? Joe the plumber. now that he lost the election, but he still has his agent, you know. Did he just make this whole thing up because he had nothing better to do?
Well, it could be either.
Yeah. Hold on. Do you see what I'm getting at?
No.
Yeah? It isn't like the Dharma is some self-existent thing out there. Yeah, but we have the opportunity of learning the Dharma because the Buddha taught the Dharma. So does that make it seem like...
Makes me see how it can be of tremendous, how somebody can be of tremendous benefit.
Yeah.
Which is what I...
Right. You know, how somebody can benefit so many people in that way from having actualized the path themselves. Yeah. So if Buddha can benefit people in that way, what about us? But what are you going to do with all those troublesome sentient beings?
I just had another thought as going back to the Nazi example. How do we know that we weren't Nazis? And if we consider ourselves good people right now, so aren't we, in fact, I have a connection here. I can't quite connect the dots, but it feels like if we, because we, as much as people have harmed us, we've harmed other beings as well. Mm-hmm. And so I don't consider myself a terrible person. And as someone talked about, you know, our own suffering and stuff. So it seems like we're kind of lifting everyone out of the suffering.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're saying that we've done awful things, but we don't consider ourselves bad people.
Right.
So why do we consider other people who have done awful things as bad people?
Yeah, not worthy of being helped.
And not worthy of being helped.
Yeah.
But we still consider ourselves worthy of being helped.
Yeah.
So aren't we being a little bit biased? That's a little bit there, huh? Does it make you feel uncomfortable to have to admit that other people deserve happiness and they deserve to be helped and that it might require some energy on our part? I mean, theoretically, yeah, they want happiness, they deserve to be helped. That's not too hard. It takes some effort, you know, because we're so used to judging people. Yes, you have to get over that judgmental mind to think of sentient beings as worthy of being helped. But then to go out and do something? I mean, when you can sit there, relax in your own comfortable chair, sleep in your warm bed, drive a nice car, eat the kind of food you like, why should we exert ourselves?
Well, that's assuming those things are really that great, which they're not.
They aren't? How come the whole world wants them then?
Because they're confused.
The whole world's confused?
Indeed.
You're sure?
I'm absolutely positive.
But all these other people don't agree with you. They think the world's really smart. And they're going to look at you and say, you know, flake.
That's one of those looks these days. But, you know, you just sally forth knowing on one day you'll have their turn.
Mm-hmm. So you keep on going even though they think you're ridiculous?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but what are they going to think about you?
They think whatever they want. It's just a thought, you know. They think what they want, you know.
But when they think bad thoughts about you, you don't care?
Not particularly.
I say mean things to you, you don't care?
Depends what you're saying it about.
Oh!
It's more painful, but when I stop and get some space and I look, If there's pain, there's always like self attached to it and all this stuff that I realized, oh, this is, you know, what they said is, people can say things, certain things that have no effect at all, but will hurt another person greatly.
Mm-hmm.
They can say certain things to other people that doesn't bother them a bit, but it hurts me deeply. Mm-hmm. So does that mean, what's going on there? It's like, oh, there's this big attachment to me, this big sore that I'm sort of nourishing through my sense of self, my attachments, my confusion, my deep confusion, and not understanding how things really are. And if I'm honest, I really look, I see there's work to be done in my own heart and pulling away these conceptual, you know, ideas, the way things are, these emotional obscurations, all this crap, and slowly scrubbing it away and looking, you know, what's really true in here, what really works, and what do I think works, but, you know, closer examination really doesn't.
So you're saying that our happiness doesn't come from outside? Then how come the world's doing everything they're doing to try and...
Because the world's insane.
The world's insane?
There's an awful lot of people that are confused.
Yeah?
And that's a big pill to swallow when you realize, oh, actually...
That means your mother and your father and your brothers and sisters and all the people you love are confused?
Deeply. Yeah.
Yeah? You mean that all the teachers you had in grade school, all the people you love being with, who have such a good sense of humor and make you laugh, who you feel so close to because you've shared so many experiences with, who you know are going to be there when you're sick to take care of you, that all those people are confused?
Except the ones that must have all stopped us pretending
to be confused. Maybe they go in and out of confusion.
They're half confused?
Yeah, they're all confused. Look what people are doing to try to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
They're miserable.
Mm-hmm. But we love those people so much.
Yeah.
Yeah?
We think we do.
Oh, we think we do?
We're attached to them. I'm sorry, we're just attached. Can't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just say this is an aspiration and say, well, you know, it's a goal. You know,
what's a goal?
To want to have a thought of attaining my individual beliefs. And you say, well, you know, you have to have some aspiration in life. And
so it might as well be this one. I don't want to be an electrician, so it might as well be a Buddha.
You could have been a teacher, you know, but instead you chose to be a nun. So you have to be careful. You didn't have a teacher, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't want to be an electrician. If you wanted to be an electrician, you'd be an electrician.
I think it goes, you got to think about the Four Noble Truths.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just set everything straight.
What? I should think about. I don't understand.
Why be an electrician? Oh. You're going to turn on some lights.
Okay, okay. Want to turn on some other kind of lights. Okay. Okay. But you see why I'm probing you on this thing, you know? Because we say, oh yeah, for the benefit of all sentient beings, but do we really believe it? Do we really want to? Why? Alex said that we feel more happier when we're generous. Do we really? You know?
Yes. I stand by that. Yes.
Yeah. When you sit down with your checkbook and you look at how much you have and it's going down and it's going down and it's going down, you feel happy about...
Well, you're not describing me being generous. You're describing me being miserly.
Oh. So how does the generous Alec act?
The generous
or
Alec
think?
Thinks like this. Just give me a few minutes, okay?
Okay.
I've only recently met him, so from a
space, this is how I try to go about it, from a space of really considering the lack of difference between me and some other person, and then saying that there's a resource that I could share with them. Like, these are actually the thoughts I'm having, and the emotion arises in my heart. The emotion feels kind of liberating. And when I actually go to them and I give them the thing, so for example, at work, there's one resident who is constantly wanting to be, and she's always wanting to talk with me. And so there are some times when I feel miserly, and my mind is very tight, and I just reject, and I'm miserable, and I'm pushing her away, and she's probably angry as well. But the times when I think of her as not being any different from me, and then I go up to her, and I sit down with her, and I talk about her new coloring book for 20 minutes, I can't really describe it very well, but afterwards, you know, there's a lightness in my step, and there's a smile on my face. And I don't know maybe why, but this is true, and I stand by that.
How about other people? Is it more often that you spontaneously want to give, or that you have to talk yourself into it?
I don't think there's a choice. I feel like I have a sense that there's not a choice for me. I want to be more understanding. I want to attain enlightenment for myself first. But I feel like as I progress on that path, I feel like there's things that I just do, and I don't know really where it comes from. I just look at it as I don't have a choice. It's like, oh, it's the right thing. It seems like the right thing to do because of wherever I am on that path. And if I get further on the path, then there's probably other things that I would do without feeling like I don't have a choice. I just do it, and then it and that comes, I think, from more understanding.
So you're saying when there's understanding, then kind of kindness just comes without having to go through a big process to get yourself to be kind.
I don't feel like I have a process to get there.
Well, I sometimes bump into it in mine that says, I just don't want to do anything.
I think I can have idiot compassion quite frequently, especially when it comes to people. Like an example is the guy who comes up from downstairs, and he's been drinking all night long, and he wants to come sit in my kitchen and drink a beverage and talk. But meanwhile, I'm trying to get on with my life. And what he really needs, I know what he needs from me. He needs somebody. He needs a calm place to be and to be inspired, because he sees my practice and goes, wow, I wish I could, you know, and so he comes up to that, but I don't always have time. So I'm not feeling very generous, but a lot of times I'll give him my time. And he's not the only one where I just get very confused and I feel like I'm frittering away a lot of my time and my resources with people who want my time, or else some project so-and-so dropped the ball, and so somebody's got to pick it up, and I happen to have the ability to do it, and so I'll step in, and then suddenly I find that my time in trying to be generous, maybe I'm trying to appear to be generous, my time for the priorities of my life, my time's not reflecting my priorities anymore. And I think I'm being generous, but really I think I'm wasting my time in the reality.
Okay, so you find yourself stepping in and helping others, but then the things that you've set as priorities in your life don't get done. So you feel like you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
So what's happening in that situation?
I think you're getting wisdom, personally. Because I think that for myself, I think exactly what you said at the beginning, this kind of a compassion that doesn't have any wisdom, and you're actually sometimes not really helping people. You know, it's not skillful enough. You're just kind of helping them to do the same old thing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think that kind of reflection is what leads to change.
What?
The kind of reflection that she's talking about, I think, is what leads to change of prioritizing and looking at things differently.
But you know, here's that person who, you know, just wants to get a little bit of inspiration by talking to her. So what's wrong with helping them?
I don't think there's anything wrong if you were helping them. But I think if you look at the big picture, sometimes you're not really helping them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have that much time.
Yeah. So what is not helping them about that?
I think what's not helpful is when I sit there half resenting him because I wish I could be doing something else with my life and yet feeling obligated to sit there.
Okay.
I feel like I'm wasting both of our time.
Okay. So in other words, your mind isn't really being helpful. Yeah, your mind's being resentful. Because you really see something else as more valuable and yet you feel this sense of obligation. And so you do it because you should, because you're going to feel guilty if you don't, but you resent it the whole time you do. So kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Isn't that confusion?
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing with that, too, is that the person isn't receptive to any help when their mind is, you know, obscured with, you know, drink or whatever. So even if you had something to offer that was reasonable, their mind couldn't take it. Mm-hmm. Next day wouldn't even remember.
Mm-hmm. So there seems to be a few things going on. First of all, that mind isn't really a mind that's benefiting others. Yeah. Whereas if we were spending time with that person with a feeling of wanting to help and some feeling that what we were doing was helpful, then it would be an entirely different situation. But helping somebody but being resentful isn't actually helping. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's also, I'm fairly familiar with this pattern too, and in my own mind, there also discovered a horrible feeling of pity also in that motivation that, you know, in the mind that just sticks around and helps a person because they need help. But there's it's not a genuine equal, this person is just like me, I want them to be happy. There's this condescension that I really have something that could help them and
that makes me good because,
and isn't helpful.
Well, I was just thinking with this part of the discussion, which I can totally absolutely relate to, but I was just thinking for me, it comes back to that having the skillful means to really know how to help somebody. Because it just seems like from the discussion it keeps coming up over and over, and I know in my own life that comes up a lot.
A lot, yeah. So does that mean that until you're a Buddha you don't help anybody?
No. You just keep working on it.
Yeah.
Keep working on it, keep working, trying to develop the wisdom and the compassion.
Mm-hmm. So you keep trying even though you could be botching it.
Yeah.
That's what practice is.
Yeah, exactly.
In practice.
That's what practice is.
That's why they call it practice.
Yeah.
Okay. So with the thought of attaining enlightenment for the welfare of all beings, who are more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel. Well, okay, they're kind, but more precious than a wish-fulfilling jewel?
Isn't that literally?
Oh, it sure does mean it literally. Yeah? In ancient India, there were these tales of wish-fulfilling jewels that you could find in the ocean. And if you brought them back, they would fulfill all of your wishes. Well, I remember when I was in, I don't know what grade it was, maybe third grade, second grade, you know, we had to draw a picture of if you had one wish, what would your one wish be? So my one wish was that all my wishes would come true. Yeah.
No eyes on you, children.
So I was wanting the wish-fulfilling jewel. Yeah. Okay. So sentient beings, and the wish-fulfilling jewel, it brings you all your worldly needs, but sentient beings are more precious than that? Why? They give me my worldly needs, but so does a wish-fulfilling jewel.
But a wish-fulfilling jewel only gives you your worldly needs.
And what do sentient beings give me that's beyond that?
Full enlightenment is not possible without the sentient beings, without the object of your compassion, without the object of your wisdom.
I need sentient beings?
You need sentient beings. I'm sorry, children, but...
I can't attain enlightenment without sentient beings?
Well, you can go ahead and try, and if you do, come back and let me know. All of the ones who have said that they have some kind of understanding of this have said no.
Okay, so that means that for our own spiritual advancement, we need sentient beings. How do we need sentient beings? For our own spiritual.
They test us. They help us practice.
They give us the opportunity to practice.
Yes.
Like even what we were just talking about, the growing the wisdom from our attempts at being generous. Mm-hmm. That's helping us grow our wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And all those other far-reaching attitudes.
Okay. So we need other sentient beings to be generous too. We need other sentient beings to restrain from harming. Mm-hmm. We need other sentient beings to be patient with. Mm-hmm. All of them? Can't I just do this with a few of them? Why all of them?
Oh, wait, that was my mom.
Here's a thought. Maybe you have to say all of them, because if there's even a single condition in which you're not able to fully express a particular virtue, then how can you say you perfected it? Like, for example, if you can be generous, you give this example often, it's very easy to be generous to your friends. If your measure of your perfection of generosity was how much you could give to your friends,
mm-hmm.
This is such a narrow definition.
Mm-hmm.
So you need all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. only by taking all of them as the object will you be able to practice in the sort of, I guess, variety of situations that mm-hmm. will really culminate in the perfection.
Okay, so to really bring some practices to culmination, you know, to make them perfectly pure, we need to be able to have those feelings or do those actions towards everybody indiscriminately or impartially.
Sounds good.
Sounds good? It's not good?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's just, I cannot even imagine what that would be like.
Mm.
Very difficult. Because, yes, I can be generous to basically my friend. That's about it.
Yeah.
It seems like one of the things that's really important, because we're looking at this, all these related to other sentient beings are related to the compassion side of things. But I don't get that compassion until I realize that sense that I'm not quite so solid, and neither are they. So as long as I'm mm-hmm. holding on to this real solid sense of self, then all sentient beings doesn't really mean much to me.
Mm-hmm. And why not?
Because everything is still a reference to me. I'm not making the distinction between even the next person. Forget all of them. Just Alec and Diane, who are close by.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some preference to me, and my understanding is that they are different than me, and as long as I stay in that frame of mind of being kind of this entity that's self-existent,
mm-hmm.
I will never I don't feel like I would have that capacity to want to do something for somebody else just because I think they're equal to me, because I don't really, when I'm in that sense of me, I don't do that. I mean, listen to Alex's example about his working at his client, you know, it's that shift in the mind, the way he described it, that that solid sense melts to a certain place where we have that sense that the next person, we have that in common.
So you're saying when we have a very strong sense of self and we reference everything to self, then being impartial towards sentient beings becomes very difficult, because it's very clear that some people help us and some people harm us.
And I've got to be, it's like I said, I've got to be working those two at the same time. So it's almost like I'm looking for those spaces where I can let go enough of that solid space to be able to be compassionate. It's like there's this little weave that's happening. Which is why you say, well, we've got to eliminate ignorance. That's the only way to kind of really get anywhere. But in the meantime, we've got to be looking for that space of compassion and connectedness.
Right. So there's different ways of looking for that space of connectedness. Because on one hand, you can say, everybody's just like me in wanting happiness and wanting suffering. Or another way is to say there's no findable me, so there's no findable my friends either. And my enemies.
No, those are real.
I have a question. So when you meditate that I am, or this other person, for example, is no different from me in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, that's fantastic, and it works from time to time. Because it's still easy enough to say, okay, sure, the same as me, but that's, somehow it does not feel enough to actually generate an action. So I'm like, I'm still more important. Even though we're the same, I'm still more important.
Okay. So we're equal in wanting happiness and not wanting suffering, but I'm still more important. Okay. So what helps us get over that thing of, but still I'm more important?
Counting.
What helps us?
Their perspective. I mean, I'm struggling with that too, because I finally realized I just got to drop the illusions. I'm so far from there. I totally think I'm more important, but I've been trying stepping into their perspective and pretending I'm them, like, and then from that space, it seems if I keep doing that process of really trying to pretend I'm in their eyes looking back and then throwing myself into the past as a person and being like, that was a separate person that I was when I was a kid, and there's a separate person that's in the future, and then I could have, and that person that could be in the future could be just like him, you know, another life. And so this is, I'm not explaining it very well, but it's something I just stumbled on. Like, if I think of this continuum of whatever it is that is the stream that exists in this moment now, in the next life, I could be just like him, or somewhat like him. So he could actually be a representation in my own mind of my next life. And me, my wanting that life to have better conditions than this life right now requires me setting up conditions so that that next life can have, and hey, look, that next life is going to be as different from me as he is from me right now. And so then he goes, well, why not just melt all the barriers a little bit and pretend all these people, they're as different from me as my past lives and as my future lives. You could probably put it together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what you're saying is, you know, my past life isn't the same me as I am now. My future life isn't the same me as I am now. Other people aren't the same as I am right now. And my future life could be exactly like somebody else's life. So what's the difference between my future life and that person right now? Because they're both not who I am right at this moment. So if I care for my future life, why don't I care for this other person?
And I was even thinking that such a, the way you were describing it is, we don't, I don't even have to go to thinking about my future life. I can think about the continuum because I could be like that person in 20 years or 5 years or, I mean, whatever. You know, I don't have to take it mm-hmm. to the...
Yeah, you don't have to take it to a future life, but you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, the other person's situation seems so different from ours. You know?
But if you look at, you look how we behave, and completely, you know, you look at people and how they behave, you see that they don't even take care of their future self in, of this life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they know for sure they're, you know, they're... They're either going to die or they're going to be 60, or they're going to die or they're going to be 70, and
mm-hmm.
yet they do all kinds of things that, you know, that they've been told as a fact, you know, if you keep doing these things, you know, you may not make it, that, or if you do, you'll be really sick. And they go, mm-hmm. well, and see the way people act, it's like, well, let him worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Let her worry about
mm-hmm.
it. That person who... will be nominally at 60 or something.
Yeah. So when there's a lot of clinging to the I as we know it, as the thing that's most important, then we can't even help our future selves.
Yeah, future self of this life even.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
exactly.
Yeah.
So that kind of person is going to be hard for them to help others too. But helping ourselves sometimes is hard. We all do so many things that are bad for us, don't we?
You repeat it with how much patience you show, how probably looking, I don't know, but I imagine you look out and you go, she's doing the same crap she was doing years ago. I can't believe it, it's not helping her at all, but she persists in it, you know. But then I realize somehow you have this patience to, and I
actually, I'm fed up.
Patience when I know, more than patience, a lot of compassion to when I see other people persist in things that I see that hurt them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Same thing with their behavior. I mean, their behavior, you know, driving too fast when you know that it's dangerous to the me right this minute,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I can get away with it, or... you know, let aside whatever damage to all of my positive potential by getting angry, you know, getting angry at work is a really bad thing to do for your career, and yet, you know, blah, you know. I can, you know, come up with a lot, lots of these things where, you know, you know, your goal is to lose weight, but you still eat the chocolate cake, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm concluding my day month, so.
Yeah, so we self-sabotage.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
So the self of this minute... It's not even like the self, the solid self me of, you know, this entire life, but the solid self me of right now, this second.
Yeah.
Is the most important thing ever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that, you're saying that sense of self is very damaging for ourselves as well as for others.
Yeah. It is, isn't it?
But when it's manifest in our mind, do we feel like this is damaging?
No.
We believe it 100%.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
And we're out of control.
Mm-hmm. Totally out of control.
I was just in relation to what Tanya was just saying.
Thank you.
No, I was thinking of how the part of the first verse, we're more precious. I will constantly practice holding the dear. Well, I was just thinking, we don't practice holding ourselves dear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do we know what it looks like to really hold someone else dear?
Yeah. So that's true. I mean, when we're involved in our self-sabotaging work, thinking that what we're doing is great, then we're not holding ourselves dear. So to think that we know what holding others dear means, kind of confused, isn't it? But sometimes it is possible to see how, you know, have some clarity about how others should live their life that we can't have about our own life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? I mean, I when I was traveling, I stayed at one home, and the woman before she had a baby was completely drinking and drugging, and she stopped because she had the baby. Yeah? So for her, just caring about herself, she didn't care. But once it was caring about the baby, then she could stop.
Mm. That's an example of the preciousness of others.
Mm.
As another example of that, now, this is quite personal to bear, but I'll let you do it anyway. I have kind of what you might call two young proteges who hang out at my house all the time now. And it, in a sense, they've helped me a tremendous deal because, as we've discussed before, I no longer have the luxury of being a hypocrite. I cannot bear telling them to do one thing and then doing something else myself. And the result of, because I have them, but I've told them, you know, don't spend so much time thinking or playing video games or wasting your time being distracted. And then I go right ahead and I do that exact thing. And the result is that I cannot sleep that night. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, I won't be able to sleep. I'll be rolling around in bed, tearing my hair out, going, I wish I had done that. So this is actually an example of the preciousness of others, because I, for some reason, I'm not sometimes able to abandon my own vices for my own sake.
Mm-hmm.
I keep doing the same things again and again, even though I know that it's harming me. But when I look at this, you know, kid and say, don't do it,
mm-hmm.
somehow it's different. And I mm-hmm. cannot go on, you know, being a hypocrite. So mm-hmm. in that sense, they're very precious.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's true, isn't it? You know? That sometimes when we say something out loud to somebody else, it helps us clarify our own life and know that we have to change, because we can't stand saying one thing and doing another.
And in conclusion, I can stand by this too, actually, that even though, you know, most people would say, oh, you've done so much to help this person, and you've done so much to help that person. In the case of these two kids, actually, in the last 6 months since I've actually known them, so much has changed in my own practice.
Mm.
Actually, I feel like I've made a lot of positive progress that I may not have made otherwise.
Mm.
If I had just been in my apartment by myself every night,
mm-hmm.
with just myself to think about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's actually, yeah, so I can say that for sure.
Yeah. So interrelating with others can help you straighten yourself out in a very powerful way that just thinking intellectually about it can't do. Yeah.
Because, exactly what you said, thinking intellectually about it and not being able to sleep are two very different things. One has power, the other doesn't.
Yep. Yep. So then they're kind because they're teaching you.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. So it's not you're teaching them, they're teaching you.
Right, and so I guess that's just another aspect of their kindness, because one of my big things is my lack of humility.
Mm-hmm.
So what I find interesting, sorry, I don't intend to keep going on and on, but one of the things that I find so interesting was that both of them are particularly sensitive in a very intuitive kind of way. And they will also, on occasion, call me on things.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be in a way and in the right moment that is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so, this is what, what I'm trying to say is that traditional sort of self-referenced wisdom, whatever you want to call it, would say, this is a 13-year-old boy, and he should not be telling me what to do, ever, no matter what. I'm the one who knows, not him. And it's not true. That's not true. So, I mean, yes, there's also a lesson in humility all the time.
Yeah. When the people we're helping, in quotes, call us on our stuff, and then we want to be defensive and self and protect ourselves, but we can't. Yeah. Well, you have to just own it at that time. And then the process of owning it makes us change. Okay, so let's sit quietly for a few minutes. This merit, may we soon attain the enlightened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind, not yet born, arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore.